Welcome to the Wealth Juice Podcast, where we talk real estate, business, entrepreneurship, and building a better life. Living life on your own terms is a choice. We're bringing you the blueprint and success stories of those who are doing just that. We hope you enjoy the show. Joseph, officially welcome to the Wealth Juice Podcast. We're super excited to have you on the show. I've been following you for a little bit now, but I've watched your brand explode. You're like one of the biggest people, if not the biggest people in the mortgage space. I know you have a multiple billion dollar mortgage business. So there's a lot to cover today. But what I like to do is just for people that don't know you, maybe there's some people that are listening that don't, just tell us a little bit about yourself, like who you are and how you got into the mortgage business. That's probably where I want to start.
So Joseph Schaube, I'm the founder and CEO of eMortgage Capital. We were founded in 2015, incorporated in 2015. We started as a DBA in 2011. And, I started in the mortgage industry in 2002, just right out of college. I was kind of cast into the mortgage industry by sheer default. I had a friend that introduced me to the industry. I was seeking academia. I was going to be just a professor was my goal. And then the light hit me and I realized that I wouldn't be able to maintain the lifestyle that I wanted in Newport Beach, just in the academic world. So I immediately sought the mortgage space. What attracted me primarily was the fact that I was immediately able to help people kind of achieve the quote unquote, the American dream and enlighten people that thought that they would never be homeowners, that it was possible. So it attracted me. I found the opportunity to be of service to people.
Hey, let me pause the episode real quick. Let me know if this sounds like you. You're making six figures, you're climbing the corporate ladder, investing in your 401k and your Roth IRA, and maybe even a brokerage account. But deep down, you're asking yourself, is this really it? Like, am I just going to do this thing for the next 30 years and hope to retire in my 60s? That was exactly us just a few years back. We were curious and excited about real estate, but overwhelmed and without a roadmap. If you fast forward to today, we've built a portfolio of over 80 cash flowing units and grown our net worth to over $2 million. We've made it our mission to help busy professionals like you take that same leap and start building generational wealth for yourself and your family. That's exactly why we created the Wealth Juice Inner Circle, a private real estate investing community designed to help you get your first rental property under your belt in as little as 90 days. Inside, you'll get direct access to us, our full investing network, private off-market deals, and our exact playbook, and a community of investors who are closing deals every single week. That first property changed everything for us. We always talk about it. It was the true foundation for building generational wealth. And honestly, if we had access to something like this when we first started, we'd be 10 times further along by now. So if this sounds just like you, click the link in our show notes and schedule a call with me. Yes, me. I'll be taking the calls. We'll go over your goals, map out a plan, and get you ready to close your first deal. Let's get it.
Fast forward 2007, I started my own company, and the reason why I started my own company was called Primetime Financial Consultants. Was at the time in 2002, the industry was just really flexible, a lot of shady characters, and I just kept getting ripped off by all the people I worked with over and over and over again. So as a result, I was kind of forced into starting my own mortgage company. I took my broker's license exam. I was already qualified because I had a bachelor's degree. So started the company. Boom. Crash happened 2009. That company folded. I started another company in the loss mitigation space, saving people from foreclosure. So I pivoted into another vertical in the mortgage space. And so I kind of became very versed in the mortgage space from the front end to the loss mitigation end, which was very, very enlightening. I became a certified forensic auditor and just kind of kept growing in the mortgage space with my education. And then in 2011, I started doing while I had my loss mitigation company, I started eMortgage as a DBA. And then in 2015, I incorporated it as eMortgage Capital. So I've always been in the mortgage space, a mortgage expert. And one thing that really has defined my success is that I'm a very good sales guy. That is my niche. I'm able to get in front of strangers and convince them to do business with whoever, whatever company I had at the time. So that's been my gift. I haven't been gifted with many different things, but one thing I do have a gift for is sales. I'm a good sales guy. I've used that strategy now, my sales strategy. I went to college. I was a sociology major. I was a theater minor. And I'm also a failed actor at 16. I wanted to be a movie star, right? So I failed at that because it was just ultra competitive in Hollywood. So I kind of brought it back, you know. In my 40s, two decades later, I brought back my ability to be a theater performer and be an actor. And I used that talent that I had as a youth, and I implemented that into my personal brand development. Now, that's not like anyone can do it. I hadn't done it for 20 years, but that's where, you know, the birth of the branding, Joseph Shalaby, eMortgage Capital, and my podcast and all that, kind of, that's where I was able to lean in using that talent that I'd studied in college. So that's who I am. I'm a, you know, number one mortgage influencer in the world, top mortgage podcaster, one of the top entrepreneurship podcasts I have as well. And then I'm number one best-selling author. That's my book behind me, on Amazon. So Rising from the Sand, make sure you check it out. I'm born in Egypt, came at the age of 5, come from absolute dirt poor, upbringing. So I always maintain a third world mindset, and that, you know, poverty mindset sticks with me till this very day. I don't live a lavish life. I don't try to be lavish. I kind of keep things, you know, even keel, maintain, you know, a lifestyle as much as I possibly can, that, you know, doesn't have abundance. You know, I'm not here to be this flashy guy. I'm just a servant of the Lord. I want to do God's work. I continue to do God's work, and, you know, abundance and this lifestyle, this worldly lifestyle is not like for me. I'm just, you know, I'm Coptic Orthodox. I try to stay very, very rooted in our faith. We're the first Christian church founded by St. Mark the Apostle. So, you know, we came to America as persecuted Christians. And, you know, as a result of that, I always keep the mindset that, you know, I'm just a bondservant. I'm here to do God's work. I came here, like, by the grace of God that, you know, I had the opportunity to come to America, and serve as many people as I possibly can.
Love it, man. It's a very unique story. And just the meteoric rise, if you will, that you've had. I love the fact that, you know, you're not saying that it's something that you're giving it to somebody else or giving the credit to somebody else. It sounds like in a way, like, just when you talk about,
yeah,
God,
I mean, it's all credits from, you know, I'm not here. I'm standing here because of God's grace. You know, like, I can't tell you how many times in my childhood while I was seeking my own identity, I started as an entrepreneur very, very young, but at 16 years old, you know, I was doing events, big events. And they were, you know, I would say bottom line, like, I was throwing parties, you know, and kind of seeking this like hedonistic lifestyle as a youth. And who knows, you know, I could have been taken off this planet at any time for all the things that I had done as a youth. But God kept me here and wanted me to learn from that, those mistakes, and, you know, use them to help other people not make those same mistakes. So, you know, yeah. Now I'm obviously an adult. I got 4 children, and all I want to do is just raise good, godly kids. That's like my one purpose in my life.
Yeah, we talking briefly before the episode recording that you have 4 kids, and I want to get into the thought process and the mentality of, you know, you building a company that is $1 billion plus, you know, multiple billions of dollars. Like, it's not every day that I get to talk to people like this, and I always wonder, I kind of want to try to get inside the brain of the person who created this. And what do you think it was about your upbringing that allowed you to maybe dream this big? Do you think that, do you give the credit to the fact that you came from, and you said, quote unquote, nothing, like, that $1 billion company was even possible? It's funny because I don't even think about $1 billion company as like something that is I'm even striving for, because I really want to enjoy my life and live my life. And I know how much energy, effort, and time that it would take away from living my life to have $1 billion company. And maybe I'm completely wrong, by the way, but I'm just curious on, like, what you think it was innately inside you that allowed you to have this much success. It seems kind of out of reach even for me.
It's not out of reach. It's, you know, and we're still, like, to be candid, we're still in our very early phases of market share. And we're in a very, very good position to continue to kind of grow because the industry's contracting. A lot of people aren't able to survive the interest rates in the current state of the economy. So we're basically becoming the primary back-end ecosystem for most mortgage companies, kind of like a Keller Williams or a, you know, Remax or something, but for mortgage professionals. But, you know, I always thought big. Like, I always think big. I always think much bigger than, you know, I'm a dreamer by nature. And it wasn't until I partnered with our present chairman, Sam, that I was really able to like go to the next level because I'm just a front end guy. I'm a sales guy. I just dream it and try to put the vision to life. So I needed someone who can take my vision, bring it down to more of a realistic, attainable goal and, you know, make it happen. So I've always been, as a kid, I'm telling you, even as a, when I started my first business at throwing parties, I wanted to be the biggest party promoter in the world. You know, I started throwing and it's in my book, you know, my first entrepreneurship venture was throwing. I was the first person to start throwing like nightclubs at hookah bars. It was a concept like, and at 14, I was able to like hire DJs, hire belly dancers, hire fire breathers, hire like, you know, all these different people, hire them and curate the profits. And I didn't know how to really understand balancing profits, but I was like able to fill the room and get tons of people to come in. It's like, and from there, like now hookah bars have parties all the time. It's like a normal thing. But like I dreamt really big as a kid and I continue to dream big. Even when I started this mortgage company, I'm like, we're going to build the best mortgage company. And I, you know, how it's going to happen, I don't know. But I'll tell you this, God has his hand in it. And I always give credit back to God. And I'm like, use me as a vessel. Now, I wasn't giving credit to God as a youth. I was like, I know that I was just going through the motions. I knew that there was angels protecting me though. But now that I'm aware that God has his hand in my, whatever I'm doing, you know, now I just like, hey, use me as a vessel. My friend, my partner would always say, Joe, you've just kind of been born with a rabbit foot shoved up your butt. You'd say that, you know, like it's not a rabbit foot, you know, it's like, or is it a rabbit tail? One of the lucky ones, you know, is it rabbit foot or rabbit tail?
I think it's foot.
Yeah, rabbit foot. Like it's not a rabbit foot. It's just the hand of God in what I do. And now that I have this awareness that God is blessing what, you know, my work, and I just got to give it back to him. So, you know, God allows me to dream bigger, and all things are possible with him. So I just continue to dream big. We're very, very much in our infancy. I think there's a lot more for us to do, a lot more, business for us to have, and a lot more opportunity for us to help so many more people.
Joe, one of the ways that you've created a business this big, and this has happened, I've been following you for a little while now. You have, you know, over just about 1.5 million followers on Instagram. You have on all different platforms. You have millions of followers. You're really, really big on personal brand. And before we were recording, you were mentioning about how this is like a necessity now with AI, having a personal brand. I've been kind of preaching this from my small rooftop too, because it's gotten me connections, business, friendships, all the above, just by putting my message out in the universe and not caring what people think on the back end. I'm curious about your approach to personal branding and why you felt that it's been such a big impact in growing your companies.
Yeah, so I'm going to start from the top. Like, it puts me into rooms I would have never thought I would have been in. It opens up so many different opportunities that I can't really quantifiably measure. It allows me to network with and make friendships with people that I never would have had the opportunity to make friends with. You know, but beyond the opportunity zone that it has, it is now a necessity for people to make a decision. People are like, oh, personal brand. Well, it's not personal brand. It's not just, it's your life. And here's what it is. Personal brand isn't just personal brand. Personal brand is AI indexing. We all are excited about AI. Well, that's great. AI is fantastic. Here's the problem with AI now, if you don't have a personal brand. If AI cannot reason and quantifiably identify that you're the person to work with, then AI is your worst enemy. So financial planners, realtors, loan officers, insurance agents, all these people who have neglected personal brand, who consumers now are using AI to make their decision to work with whatever professional, whether it's a plumber, whether it's a handyman, whether it's a loan officer for their biggest decision, and they have no branding. How can AI reason? How can it reason? How can AI make a decision definitively to work with you? If handymen and plumbers have bigger brands than a loan officer, we have a problem. We have a big problem, right? And I can say with certainty, based on all the stages I've went on, that is the case right now. And it's like, it baffles me, because how much of a big deal is it to hire a handyman? Not a very big deal. How big of a deal is it to buy a house? It's a very big freaking deal. Those are the people that need to have the biggest personal brands, because that person, like if you talk to ChatGPT, ask who is Joe Shalaby, it'll give you like a ton of data. But you can go to ChatGPT and dial in on my like political opinion, on how I view things. Like there's just hundreds of thousands of hours of my content on ChatGPT. It's not just my personal brand. It's basically transcribed hundreds of thousands of hours of my verbiage. Every word I'm saying right now is being transcribed on ChatGPT, and it will be there for the ages to come. It will be like, you can emulate my mind, my thoughts, my, views on politics, my upbringing, you could ask it about anything about me, and it will answer it because of how much content I put out there. So everything you say and do and publish now is being quantified by, I don't want to call it the algorithm, by AI. I mean, Gemini, Grok, ChatGPT, whatever AI you're using, it's all being quantified. You must start to build your personal brand, or you will 100%, you will be extinct. You'll be extinct. You can't compete against people who built their brand. It's just impossible.
What advice would you give to somebody, Joe, that is starting from scratch and trying to build a personal brand, or maybe not scratch, but just like trying to get it off the ground, when they are competing with someone like you who has millions of followers? What do you think? Is it just to be authentically themselves and document their journey? Like, what's the best way to start?
Share your story. And here's the thing. Here's the problem with financial professionals. They're like, oh, I posted about the Fed. Nobody liked my video. Like, nobody cares about the Fed video. It's not interesting. You got to post about you. Nobody wants to see mortgage you. Nobody wants to see you, the realtor you. No one wants to see the insurance agent you. They want to see you. They want to see, like, so be funny, be authentic, be humorous, put out stuff that you actually like, that people will follow you for, that people will like resonate with. So I like to do a lot of comedy. Like, I'm more of a comedian than a mortgage guy, right? And then I do a lot of hot takes now, a lot of like politics stuff, things that are trending, things that I find really fascinating. If I'm doing something, if I'm, looking at content, I'm like, oh, this is cool, I'll just do a video about it, and boom, a couple million views. Or, I average anywhere from 15 to 40 million views a month on content. Average TV channel is 2 million to like a Fox, which is 10 million, or Fox might get more, but like, a normal TV network, like 10 million, right? 2 to 10 million. But those are just views, passive views. You're not even looking at the content. You're just, maybe it's on the background, right? I get 15 to 40 million views a month of actual engagement. That's likes, shares, comments, follows, and now the beautiful thing, reposts. Like, 5 ways to engage with my content. That's a much more impactful way to digest my content, which, just think about how much more powerful your content is than running a commercial. So one thing I would say to you is, treat your channel like a true TV channel. Okay. A true TV channel is, you watch the show, boom, 20 minutes, or every 10 minutes, there's a commercial, right? Then that commercial serves you the advertisement. I treat my content the same way, in this way. Your channel is your entertainment platform. Your stories are your advertisements. So my stories get 10 to 15,000 views. It's fine. I don't need 50 to 100,000 views on my stories. I'm good with 15,000 or whatever, 10,000. And I'll just run all the boring stuff on there over and over. I can put 100 stories up and it won't matter. It'll be gone the next day. So I'm good with the 10,000 views. Watch my stories. You'll get served mortgage content or whatever I'm trying to, you know, whatever product I'm selling. So that's the concept for you, is your channel is your reels are your entertainment. That's how you're driving the traffic, and your stories are the way you're serving your boring mortgage content, real estate content, insurance content, whatever it is.
Beautiful. Joe, first of all, that's really good. It's really good advice, because I think people get branding wrong these days, where, they try to maybe, some of it's like jumping on trends, but the way that you broke it down is like, hey, cast a wide net of audience, okay? And then sell or bring the value that you want for your specific niche or your specific business on the stories and stuff. So I think I want to ask you about the differentiation that you felt that you've brought in the mortgage business, like to the marketplace. Like, how does a mortgage company, who if most people don't know, they think any mortgage company can get, you know, it just work with any mortgage company. Why pick one if people that are novices? So like, tell me about the mortgage business that you've created and how you feel like, even though you said that you don't have a lot of the market share, you're still a really massive business. So what do you think differentiates you?
Market share. We're going to gain much more market share because there's a massive contraction or consolidation in the business. But okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm curious about the differentiation, like how you feel like your company has separated itself in order to grow so big. And I know you mentioned it's kind of gobbling up some of the competition. Some people are not able to stick around because of interest rates. Like how have you been able to be different?
Great question. So we are heavily, heavily investing in technology, lead gen, marketing, branding, right? And a lot of our competitors are just like, they're just not doing leads, technology. They're not giving their loan officers the opportunity to grow their business. I'm like laser focused on helping my loan officers do one more loan per month, helping them with more leads, more tech, more infrastructure, more automation, more AI implementation, more brand development, more tech strategy, more brand strategy, more infrastructure support, and more training and more coaching, and basically omitting a lot of the hurdles that they have for success. Man, if I had the resources, the tech, the leads, the data that I provide my loan officers when I was a loan officer, and I still am, I'm still a top performer, I don't even know how successful I would have been as a loan. I would have never wanted to do this. I would have just been closing so many loans all day long, you know? Like I would have just been slammed just doing loans, 20, 30, 50 deals a month. But that's the idea for me. It's like leverage the tech, leverage the leads, leverage the data, leverage me as a mentor and coach, and help me do deals for you. I brought in a guy who, because I have this big podcast, so I'm able to meet with big CEOs, and I brought in a guy where I basically arranged a whole partnership with a company that's going IPO that's looking for like a mortgage division, you know, called and they're going to use someone. I brokered the whole relationship. I brought in the LO, brought in the publicly traded company, kind of formulated this relationship for them. And I connect dots. I like to connect dots with here and there. It's like problem solve, and how can I grow the company systematically with the right relationships, the right people in place, and and I'm just always in building mode for my LOs and for the company.
How do you train, in part of your training, are you training some of the loan officers? I imagine you have a big number of them. Are you telling them all to create personal brands and all to post?
Yeah. All of them. All of them. Build your brand or you're extinct.
So everybody. What is your prediction then?
In a brutal way that just like hurts to hear.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I think I kind of like fell upon this during COVID when the world shut down, if you will. And I was like, well, I don't have much to think about to do right now. Let me like just start documenting my journey. So we started our personal brand, if you will, in like April 2020. And I've just seen the doors open up and open up, and I've learned to let go and stop caring what people think and just post and just put it out there. And like, do you have any?
I did that too. And until my board was like, dude, what you're doing is not symbolic of a CEO. You got to be like more of like a CEO, and that was tough for me to swallow.
Because I buttoned up. You have to button up. Is that what they're saying? Kind of.
So I wish I had the same creative freedom that everybody else does.
Well, I guess when you get big enough, you know, you have people that are telling you kind of like, okay, you can't do this, you can't do this. But do you have any worry or concern with AI and like privacy as things get more developed? Or is that ship sailed? It doesn't really matter anyway.
Yeah, that ship sailed, guys. Anyone's cared about privacy, like, sorry, there's not any privacy now.
Right. So you might as well lean into it. Okay, cool.
You're just another data point. How many data points do you think they have on you? You think you're going to hide your data points? I don't care if you're on an Android and you're like, you know, trying to hide and you're, you know, adding all these privacy measures and every word you say is transcribed. Everything you say is uploaded to the clouds of whatever, everything. Everything's there. There's no hiding anymore. We're in a very transparent world.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let's talk about your podcast. I want to know, there's, you know, a lot of podcasts out there, but most of them don't make it past episode 20. I realize this. So we started our podcast 5 years ago. And Joe, this is the only reason that I'm able to talk to somebody as big as you is because of the podcast. So you just said this. It's allowed you to get in rooms. You wouldn't take a phone call from me. You don't know who I am. So your team reached out and now we're having this conversation. So I think the proof is right there. The fact that we're like, why start a podcast or why build a brand? But I'm curious about what it does for you and your business. And like, talk to me about like what your podcast talks about and how you've been able to, like you said, get into rooms with the people that you really want to connect with.
Well, let me tell you, number one, I'm going to start with this. If my podcast reaches one person and helps one person get better, I've done my job. That podcast has helped me develop so much. I've taken quotes and I get to sit with people that I admire and look up to, and I get free mentorship for 1 hour, sometimes two, sometimes indefinitely, free from people that I want to be like. So right there, I've accomplished my goal with my podcast, even though it's an extensive goal. Number two, that podcast has opened up so many doors of business opportunities and relationships that I would have never thought possible. It's allowed me to think outside the four walls of my building. It's not really four walls because we're virtual. A lot of it, we have thousands of people, but you know, I don't think just mortgage now. I don't think in the one context of like financial literacy or financial obligations or, you know, it's like now I'm like a very well-rounded entrepreneur. And then I get to serve that content, put me in the thought leadership space concurrently while I was doing like a lot of entertainment space. So it allowed me to be a true thought leader. Okay. Now I'm going to get off of me and why it's benefited me and my business. And now it's an entrepreneurship podcast, not just a mortgage podcast. Start off as just a mortgage podcast talking about to mortgage CEOs, how they built their businesses, top mortgage CEOs. And then I pivoted. So it allowed me build relationships with all my competitors, all as friends. Now, all my competitors are my friends. That would have never happened. You know, Like they all were on my podcast. I could say that. I got content. And it allowed my competitors for their people that work for them to learn about them because they're like ghosts. You know, like they don't do anything publicly because they don't have the opportunity of the medium. So I've been thanked by my competitors, by their own people. They're like, I didn't know anything about, you know, Trevor Barrett. I didn't know anything about, you know, whoever because there's no content. They got no content. So it's allowed I've helped my competitors and I'm happy with that because I'm just here to serve. Yes, I'm gamifying it. I want to dominate my competition like a basketball game. Like I'm still an active competitive basketball player in a league and stuff. So it's the same concept. Like when I'm on the court, I'm going to smoke you. Off the court, we'll go have a beer, you know?
I've learned it's so funny you're saying this because talking to somebody who's as successful as you, the competition all happens at the bottom. And I don't mean that like, of course you said you want to dominate, but like the collaboration is what's happening at these higher levels. Even though like, if you're helping your competitor, I've just found that the more that I put, like if somebody reaches out to me and the quicker that I'm able to connect them with somebody that could benefit them, even if it steps on my toes in my business, it's just, I found that that's naturally reciprocated back. So it's cool to hear from someone who's like, you know, you're essentially building somebody else's brand for them by having them come on your podcast, which is a beautiful thing. And again, it goes back to just like serving. You do God's work, I think more people need to.
I live by this quote. You do God's work, he always does your work. Like it's my mentor. One of my spiritual mentors told me that. I live by that now. And it works.
Let's talk about your book. I'm looking at it in the background, people that are watching on YouTube, Rising from the Sand. What inspired you to write a book, and how did, like, just talk to us about the book and like what it means to you. The name of it's intriguing to me, so I'm very curious.
So if you look at the cover, it's the sand right behind me, the sands of Egypt. I come from Cairo, Egypt, poverty, right? And then in the horizon there is the landscape of Newport Beach. I'm coming from the poorest part of the world. I'm not just from Egypt, because a lot of Egypt is beautiful. It's third world country. I'm coming from a town called Helmet Zetoun, which is the poorest part of a third world. I like to joke and say it's like a sixth world country. You know, flats, really, really dingy. You know, I lived on like the fifth floor. There's no elevators. It's like I lived in like a couple hundred square feet, no AC. It's the desert, you know. It's like, and so I'm coming from this really poor part of the world, and now I'm in the most abundant place in the world, Newport Beach, California. It's the richest part of the world, right? It's like everybody I know won a Super Bowl. My kids go to, you know, school with people that are just insanely well. They don't know poverty, right? I have to take them to go serve the poor and stuff just to kind of get acclimated with that. But they don't understand that part of the world. They don't understand the struggle. But the book is basically, it's my story. It's my journey. It's a book about my story. It's a book about triumph, struggle, entrepreneurship, leadership, what inspired me. I talk about my father. I talk about my divorce. I talk about, you know, my kids. I talk about what it means to be, you know, all. I was inspired to write it after, you know, the divorce. And the problem with being an entrepreneur is like it weighs on a marriage. Because, you know, even though I'm a great father, I'm always there for all my kids and all their activities and everything about my kids, you know, I wasn't the best husband because I'm pulled in so many directions. So after that, kind of going through and reshaping my own, you know, identity, I was just like, I'm gonna add to this, you know, I'm gonna publish this book, kind of tell my journey, my story, my struggle, my triumph. And, you know, I'm in my comeback version of me right now. So all this success has been, you know, building up to the next version of who I'm going to be, which I'm still aggressively working on.
Yeah. I thank you for sharing that. I think it's cool. I sometimes we like to get a little bit more personal on this, because I building wealth and, you know, wealth creation and all this entrepreneurship stuff, like there's a deeper meaning behind it. And I want to ask you a question that I've asked a couple people, and I take all the lessons that I've learned, like you said, the coaching session for free from people that I brought on this podcast. I do not have kids. I am actively trying to build wealth for myself. I've done an okay job of it. I'm trying to grow and get bigger and better and be a better person. But I didn't come from poverty like you. And I think about this all the time, like somebody who's come from the struggle that you've come from and the way that you were about, that you elevated yourself throughout the way up. Knowing that you have kids that didn't have to experience that, you mentioned something about going and serving the poor. I'm curious about how, if there's a way, or if you've had a way to instill some of the fire, if you will.
I ask that same question to everyone on my podcast. Just so you know.
There you go. Okay, so we're thinking the same thing.
I always ask, how do you instill the grit, that mindset in your children?
Has anyone asked you before? I hope they have.
Yeah, no one's asked me, because that's my question I always ask, but I'm going to tell you what I do. And I think it's starting to get kind of like applied in my kids. My kids are all learning like to hustle and sell and grind at a young age. I make sure that they see dad working. I do a lot of content. The easiest way for me to relate them to working is like do content with me. My kids do, you know, content with me. What I found, this is funny, and this is what I'm really into now with my kids, is the fastest way for me to teach my kids like a direct correlation for entrepreneurship for me has been sports cards and Pokemon cards. So, you know, my kid, because the charts are all the same. So I start to enroll my kids in, like, I know I brought in someone called Eric Michael, great guy to meet, who's the number one sports card coach in, you know, and he runs more Major League Profits, and me and my son followed him. And so I, you know, these are like high level classes, you know, the charts are the players are the same, like a stock. Player gets hurt, card goes down. Players, you know, wins a Super Bowl, card goes up, whatever. It's the same thing, like a stock. The charts are the same. They move all day long. So I started to teach my kids entrepreneurship through sports cards. We go to shows. We set up tables. They flip cards. And I'm just, they start to understand the context of money. But the biggest thing is my sole responsibility as a father, number one, is to make sure that my kids know Christ, you know, like they know God. That's number one. That's baseline. Like church, there's no like argument. Even though me and their mom aren't together, like all my kids, we go to church every Sunday and most Saturdays, you know, for Sunday school. And so it's a non-negotiable in my household. You know, like we go to church, we do God's work, we serve, you know, they go to Catholic school, so they go to Mass. I attend the prayers with them. I was there this morning, you know, for their morning prayer session. I try to attend, you know, that 3 to 4 times a week. So I try to like make sure that number one baseline, Christ is in the center of their life. We pray, they go to church. And then from there, you know, they see Dad working all the time. They're around me working. They come to work with me. They work with me. My son, he's obsessed with like, hey Dad, can I go shoot videos with you? Let me find content for you to like, you know, inspire your content. You know, let me find these videos for you to, you know. So they understand the concepts. This morning I was talking to my daughter, like make sure, cause I have a pretty rigorous morning routine, you know, like red light and journaling and stretching and then vitamins and then protein. You know, it's like a 1 hour morning routine. Tell my daughter, like you got, you know, we went and bought gratitude journals. I do my gratitude journal in the morning. Like you got to do your gratitude journal. So it's like being thankful, remembering God, keeping God in your midst. There's no solution. I hope and pray that this all works, but like I'm doing things that I know that I didn't have the opportunity that are teaching them because I come from nothing. They got to like learn grit on their own. They got to learn, you know, a mindset of winning on their own. They're very, very disciplined. They're in work that, you know, they go to their calendars are just like mine from 8 to 3 is school. 3 to 5 is, you know, sports. 5 to 7 is studying. 7 bedtime. It's like, boom.
Yeah. Before we wrap this show up, I want to leave you with this. If you're listening to the show, chances are you're doing pretty well in your career. You're making maybe 6 figures. You're putting money into your retirement accounts, maybe stacking some cash in a brokerage account, but you're still waiting for that next level. And here's the truth. Waiting just costs you time. Every month you're on the sidelines is another month you could have had a property paying you and another step closer to financial freedom that you didn't take. Ryan and I know this because we stayed on the sidelines too long. We talk about this sometimes. We had the money, but not the guidance. And once we finally got our first property, everything shifted. It was the catalyst that built our entire portfolio and ultimately gave us freedom. And that's exactly why we built the Wealth Juice Inner Circle. To cut out wasted time, just give you the exact blueprint and surround you with a network of people who are closing deals every single week. So if you're tired of waiting and you're ready to finally get your first deal, click the link in the show notes and schedule a call with me. Let's map out your strategy and get you moving before another year slips by. I think that was a great answer. I really was just genuinely curious about that because it's a challenge, I imagine, for anyone who's seen success.
Sure, because they don't have struggle.
Yeah, and you have to fabricate the struggle. So it's like, but that's great. I think that's how they probably how they learn it. One of the last questions I have for you is, you know, I've just noticed talking to people who have quote unquote made it. Which, by the way, you probably don't feel this way.
I'm still in the, you know.
I know. I knew you were going to say that. But like from the outside looking in, you still have that, like you have this fire. You have a $1 billion company. You have millions of followers. You have, you know, a lot going for you. I'm curious, what are your future goals? And maybe you said you're figuring that out right now. Like, where does this? I know that's like a continuous improvement thing. That's what entrepreneurship is. There is no end, but I'm wondering about where you'd like to be 5 years from now. Where do you see yourself? Where do you want to go?
Well, I mean, number one, I want to make sure that all my kids are healthy and make sure that they're all, you know, my daughter will probably be in 5 years, like finishing high school. My son will probably be in, you know, that they're all healthy and they're all happy. And they've kind of all just found their groove with sports and studying and, you know, and they know what they want to do. Not with their careers, but I don't know where the world of AI is going to be. But, you know, all my kids are healthy and happy and in a good place mentally and spiritually. Number two is I want to make sure that the company has significantly more market share. I'm talking like we should be doing 1.5 billion to 2 billion a month by then. So we should be doing billions of volume. And, you know, we continue to have targets on our back as we grow. So, you know, always being attacked kind of sucks, but what can you do? It's part of the game. But, you know, the company is in a healthy position to continue to grow and gain more market share. And hopefully, you know, I'll be married again or whatever, you know, I'll have like a relationship that's like much more stable and I'll be in a better position because I can give more time to my significant other. Money's not the chase for me. I have more money than I need right now. So I want to be in a place where I can serve and do more charity and more philanthropy in 5 years that, you know, and hopefully like start to kind of kick off my foundation to have much more of an impact.
Beautiful. It's a great answer. Last question for me. I don't ask this to everyone, but I just, for some reason, feel compelled. What's the number one thing right now that keeps you up at night? What's the number one thing that keeps you up?
I mean, I would say, you know, I worry about my kids and their emotional and mental health. That's like, you know, I struggle a lot with my kids and freaking devices. I hate them. And it's like the new crack. I wish there was a solution to just end it. Notably, Roblox. I would say that, and then the legal, like the company's always being attacked by like random people. When you're a big company, you just come up like this guy tries to sue this company. Like, where did they even come up with this stuff? You know? So that's the stuff that bothers me. Like, I got depositions, I got this, I got that, and I got to just deal with it. And it's just like so annoying and such a drain on me.
I was told from a mentor a few months ago, or maybe like a year ago, they said, you know, you haven't made it until people start suing you. I was like, that doesn't seem like the sign of making it, but,
Dude, yeah. No, it's like all the freaking time.
Yeah.
All the freaking time, you know, like all day long. But I was making the holy bread this Sunday and I have a friend who's one of the executives at Walmart. And I'm like, how many lawsuits does Walmart have? Is it like 100? He's like, no. I'm like, is it like 1,000? He's like, no. I'm like, what is it? He's like, it's like hundreds of thousands of lawsuits. Like just to think about that is like crazy.
It's unbelievable. Joseph, this has been a pleasure, man. I respect your time. I know you have something at the top of the hour. I feel like, you know, learning from somebody who's made it to the level that you have and being able to have a candid conversation about what you're focused on just inspires me to keep going and building my thing. So I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. If people want to learn more about you, they want to network, they want to, you know, maybe even, you know, establish an opportunity to get a mortgage or take out a loan through you guys, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you, your brand, or your companies?
Well, I would say follow Joseph Shalaby. That's, you can't get in touch with me on Instagram through Joseph Shalaby. But if you want to get in touch with me directly, Joseph Shalaby on LinkedIn, Joseph Shalaby on, if you want to message me directly, follow the Joe Shalaby on Instagram. And then I check that DM because that's a small group. And I, you know, add me, the Joe Shalaby, and it's private. But then I'll add you because I go through who's adding me, and it's as long as it's someone I can tell it's like legit, I'll add them. The Joe Shalaby on Instagram, Joseph Shalaby. Make sure to follow that, and message me on LinkedIn. And my email is joe@emortgagecapital.com if you want to email me directly.
Beautiful, man. Thank you so much for spending time with me this hour. I've learned a lot and I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. Thanks, Corey.
So if you're enjoying the show, one thing that would go a long way for us would be sharing this podcast episode or the podcast in general with a friend, family member, or someone else who you think might benefit from it. It's pretty hard to grow a podcast and we're bringing out these episodes every single week and we want to continue to do so. And in order for us to grow, a couple things you can do is one, leave us a 5-star review. That would go a long way. And then just share this with someone else that you think could benefit. That would be amazing. And we appreciate it. And we're looking forward to bringing out more episodes for you.